This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. My guest today is Loida Garcia-Fibo. She is the 2018-2019 president of the American Library Association. Circulating Ideas is brought to you with support from Mometrics and from listeners like you. Find out how you can support the show by going to circulatingideas.com/support or patreon.com/circideas. With library budgets constantly shrinking, it's getting harder and harder to provide the resources your library patrons want and need. That's why the folks at Mometrics Test Preparation created the Mometrics e-Library. Through their e-Library portal, Mometrics offers study guides and practice questions for over 1,800 different exams covering college entrance, graduate school, nursing, medical, teacher certification, civil service, I'm counting this on my fingers, I'm running out of fingers, and many other careers and fields of study. All fully customizable and at a fraction of the cost of printed books. It's like having an entire library of test prep materials all at your fingertips. So, save space, save paper, and save money with Mometrics eLibrary. To get a free demo and 10% off your first purchase, visit goelibrary.com and let them know you came from Circulating Ideas by using the promo code PODCAST. That's goelibrary.com, promo code PODCAST. Loida, welcome back to Circulating Ideas.
Hi, I'm so happy to be back. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, we saw each other at the Georgia Library Conference recently, and you've been traveling around a lot, and I want to talk about that a little bit later of how you've been traveling around to different libraries and different library conferences all out around the country. But I do want to get started with learning about how you became a librarian in the first place.
Yes, well, I grew up with a librarian. My mother was my librarian from first grade to 10th grade. And I lived that, and I loved seeing her serving students. I was also part of the library book club, and I recruited my friends and my classmates to be part of the book club. And my mom also presented programming, different programming for the students and for the professors. And so I lived that, and I saw that, and I really liked it. When it was time for me to study, I went into business because that's another area that I really enjoy. And I enjoy accounting and finances, economics, all that. And so my bachelor's degree is in business. And then I wanted to continue studying. And my mom, she suggested me, what about master's in library and information sciences? Mm-hmm. Because another piece of information is that I went with my mom to university when she was doing her master's. So I went from being with her, in the library at the school where I was studying to then to college. And I will, do my homework at the university library and met her classmates. And so it was an environment that I was very familiar with, and I enjoyed a lot, and I wanted to follow that. And I'm very glad I did.
And you grew up in Puerto Rico, correct?
I did, yes.
And at what point did you move to the U.S.? Did you do all your studying in abroad? Or not abroad, it's a U.S. territory.
Yes. I did my bachelor's in business and my master's in library information sciences at the University of Puerto Rico. And the school in Puerto Rico is an ALA accredited school. So that was wonderful. When I decided to move to the States, I applied to different positions across the country. And I was very proud that I was a student from an ALA accredited program. And then I got a job at Queens Library, where I was for many years. But I am a product from the library school in Puerto Rico.
That's excellent. I never knew before that they had a library school there. So that's great.
Yes, it's wonderful.
And is it still there today?
It's still there. And I just, let me see. Last year, when I had just taken the position of president-elect, they invited me to give a keynote speech for the graduating class. And so I did that last July. And I am planning to go back in March 2019. And they're still there. My dissertation advisor is there. And this is to, I want to clarify that in the library school in Puerto Rico, you must write a dissertation. And it's at the master's level. But it's a very comprehensive program. So my advisor is still there, and a number of the professors are there. And it's wonderful. And I'm very glad because there are a number of classmates that work now in different parts of the United States. As a matter of fact, there is one of my colleagues from that school. She works at NASA. Oh, and cool. She is probably one of the only or librarians that is working at NASA. Yes, it's very cool, and it's all the product of Puerto Rico. As you know, recently they went through a really ravaging hurricane that decimated libraries there. So I think, you know, in a way, I will say it's good that I am president and I am from Puerto Rico because I was able to call attention to the situation of the libraries there. And, you know, and I'm glad that the library community worldwide responded and provided some help. They will need help for years to come.
Right.
But I think the response from the library community was beautiful. And I will just take this chance to say if anybody is, you know, can consider helping libraries in Puerto Rico, there's still time. There will be time for years to come. And one of the ways they could help is through the ALA relief page. They could go there and donate. They could adopt a library. And the information is on the ALA International Relations Office website. And they can also, something I can suggest is they can connect through the Reforma chapter in Puerto Rico. The president is Elizabeth Borges, and she has connected many librarians from different parts of the world, including the U.S., with libraries directly, because that's another way that people could give or help. You know, there are different needs. There might be needs for training on how to write grants or how to preserve. And then I need physical needs, you know, maybe with the building or equipment. So, yeah, it's a good way to connect directly with libraries. And I was very glad that I was able to go there last January. Actually, at the beginning of this year, I went with Tess Tubbing, and she was the Reforma president at the time. Mm-hmm. And we visited academic libraries and school libraries, and we saw with our eyes, you know, firsthand, the situation. And a number of libraries are still closed, but we hope that situations improved, you know, this coming year and next year. It is indeed something that is going to take time, but I am glad that the library community has responded.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's nice it's getting attention now, but like you said, they're going to keep needing help, so we need to try to keep them in our thoughts and keep trying to support them. So,
yes, thank you.
So you're about halfway through your presidency at this point. How has it been going so far? And is there anything that kind of surprised you about the position?
This is great. I think one of the main highlights of being president is the opportunity to speak with librarians across the country. And mainly, I am a person that is very into serving communities, and having those conversations have been wonderful. I've had inspiring conversations that really give me hope for our future as a profession and as a country and also for our communities. I did write a column about some of that. My last column from American Libraries magazine for November, December issue is about that. But it really is, it's just, I've discovered or rediscovered how much love and passion librarians have for their communities. And that's very important. But besides that, there are other things, you know, visiting and going to speak at conferences, visiting different states. That's beautiful. And feeling how, you know, the warm welcome from the colleagues is wonderful. But one of the highlights, another highlight besides my National Library tour that I hope to share with you some of that later, was the opportunity to advocate for libraries at the European Union Parliament. And it's the first time that an ALA president has been invited to do that. And they were very specific. They want me to talk about our partnerships to bring coding to more youth in our communities, and also about my National Library tour, which is an advocacy effort. And that was great. And I'm very thankful because they thought about, you know, the American counterparts, the librarians. And it was a program presented by Generation Code. That is a very strong program in Europe. And the Public Libraries 2020 and EBLIDA, which is the European Bureau of Library Information and Documentation Association. So all the associations in Europe are a member of EBLIDA. If you ask me about the most surprising or moment, I want to say that it was a very inspiring moment. And so far during this presidency, this is the most surprising one. And it's I met librarians at one of my National Library Tour stops in Colorado Springs. And they had tears in their eyes because I was speaking about serving everyone in the community, you know, all the different groups we have. And we have, you know, immigrants, and we have seniors and refugees and LGBTQI, you know, homeless, incarcerated. We have all these populations. And they felt very touched that I was speaking about serving them, because they were experiencing a bit of, you know, barriers to provide service to all those populations, you know, everybody in the community they are working. And so they were having a tough time. And I think they were happy to hear that the ALA president supports and actually encourages us to do, you know, follow our core principles, what Library Bill of Rights says.
Right.
And I thought it was the way we should actually think, the way we should serve library workers, to serve communities. And I was happy to support them in person. And, you know, I think maybe it's about the times we're living, but that was very eye-opening. And we had a good moment there, encouraging each other to continue doing this.
That's great. And talking about advocacy, one of the big goals of your presidency is that you want to strengthen the advocacy efforts. And part of the way you're doing that is the national tour that you're talking about. Can you talk a little bit more about why you wanted to do that tour and how that's going?
Yes, yes. My theme for this tour is libraries equal strong communities. I believe libraries are saving lives every day, libraries and library workers. But we are facing challenges, as you mentioned, and we have mentioned in this conversation. We have to constantly fight for budgets to keep libraries open, adequately staffed, and, you know, with equipment, materials that can help our communities, and we need everyone's support. So this is why I'm going around the country. I have this tour, Libraries Equal Strong Communities, to advocate for libraries. That's the main purpose, and to raise the profile of libraries and the value of library workers and libraries. So I want to share the stories. I want to amplify that message of what libraries are doing and how they are serving communities, you know, job seekers. They are helping first-generation college students, people seeking to information about health conditions. There are, you know, many different types of library users. And I believe that we need to amplify the message to Congress, to the elected officials. And this can be done locally and then amplify it nationally. And so that's what is happening. So far we have visited the library at Pikes Peak Library District. That's the name of the public library in Colorado Springs. And then we went to Cambridge Public Library in Massachusetts. And at both places, we have felt tremendous support for libraries. We had elected officials in Pikes Peak. We had the president of the Chamber of Commerce. We had also an invitation from a local women's group to talk about libraries and how they are helping women and issues related to women. That was powerful. And in Massachusetts, in Cambridge, we had the mayor of Cambridge. We had, I think it's the second in command from the governor of Massachusetts. And we have a number of people from the community. And at both locations so far, we had also library leadership. We had the state librarians. We had the president of the, you know, the state association. And we have members of the community. It was an event for the community, really. It was a rally for libraries. And that is what I'm doing at these tour stops. And one beautiful piece is that the media have gotten interested in this. So in Colorado, we had several different media. And then we were featured in a TV station. They recorded interviews for two different TV shows, news shows, and another one was about lifestyle. Wonderful, right? That they include libraries in lifestyle.
Yes,
you know, and in Massachusetts, the Horn Book, which I understand is a very popular website for people that, you know, they are doing collection development in children's. And so we have that, and I like that we are making the news. Libraries are making the news, and they're interested. And so that's wonderful. And so we had, yes, we had local community organizations, elected officials, the media is there. And I want to share that if someone would like to replicate this type of event, which is really a rally for libraries, and you can do it, you know, just let's think back perhaps to the 80s or the 70s. This was done in different parts of our, let's say, society. And I think ALA did a number of these when Pat Schumann was president. We did at least one in Washington, D.C., this rally for libraries. And then Betty Turok actually visited 10 cities. Her tour was 10 cities. And actually, I should say, the person who gave me the idea for this library tour was Betty Turok. She called me on the phone and she said, "Loida, you have to do this tour." I did 10 cities. And so I said to her, "Well, maybe I do five, but it's working out." So the concept really of reaching out, you know, including media, elected officials, all that comes from Betty. And I really appreciate and love her for that. And of course, ALA staff has helped tremendously with the organization, and each library has also dedicated many hours and staff to the organization. So if someone would like to replicate this, and this is something that I would like to encourage, we have created a website. It includes press release templates, photos with the logo, also the logo of the tour. There are checklists, you know, to guide you on what you need to do. And there are many materials to help people in libraries do this rally for libraries in their own areas, and they can customize it, you know. But at the end of the day, library advocacy is the same, includes the same concepts for academic, public, and school libraries. I also want to mention that the ALA staff members are wonderful. They created a Facebook frame for your profile picture, and also you can use that for the Instagram if you want. So I suggest you, please, everybody, check out the website. It is part of the ALA.org, and it's in the news area. It's a press kit, and it's about libraries, strong communities. And I hope you can, everybody can look it up. And I hope to hear about the examples of different events around the country.
That's great. this year, a few months ago, libraries got some good news that after not supporting the funding of libraries, the president did sign legislation that increased some funding for libraries. Can you talk about that funding that libraries and education have recently received, and I know the Washington office does most of that stuff, about how we how library supporters can help accomplish and get that funding. How what their stories, how that helps.
Yes, definitely there is strength in numbers. And the efforts of our big team, ALA has a big team of more than 58,000 members, and it's great. All their phone calls, the letters they have mailed or emailed, their tweets worked out. And this is important. I want to first thank each one of the library advocates out there, the library workers, their families, neighbors, friends, you know, everybody is very important. And everybody has called and tweeted or sent letters. And so, yes, our efforts are spearheaded by the ALA office in Washington and our Office for Library Advocacy. And I love the work the staff members are doing. For instance, now library advocates can find their senators or legislators' information in terms of to send text or tweet on the ALA Washington office page. They can enter the zip code and they get a list of the senators and legislation. And then there's a template and they could select that or they could do their own thing and then use the information there to tweet directly. So it goes both ways, and I've done that too. I like to customize, tell my own stories or stories from my neighborhood. That's important. And I'm very glad that everybody, there are so many people doing that, not only ALA members, but like I said, friends and family members. And they also, on their website, there is a new piece of information. People can find out if their senators or legislators signed the LSTA and IAL letters, the DR appropriation letters. And they can, of course, contact them again and encourage them to sign that for the 2020 budget because, you know, this never stops. We have to
Right,
continue.
right.
Yes. So, you know, so we have this template to help library advocates to tell their stories. And they can do that sending letters to the editor. And now we are encouraging this type of letters to the local media. And there are some templates people can use or people can read and say, oh, of course, I can customize this to my own library or my own story. And so that's available on the ALA Washington site. And people can also share with ALA if they don't, for whatever reason, you know, want to send that, they could send information to ALA, and there's a form online provided for that, and ALA will hand deliver the stories to the elected official. So we have always different opportunities to connect and share the stories. And so yes, and of course we also have a thank you letter. And it's a template again, and people can use it, or if they could read it, you know, and get inspiration to do their own. And so this is very important. There are many opportunities for people to participate and connect with their elected officials. I want to share that one of my efforts is to develop a video series to help library advocates tell their own stories to impact library advocacy. Sometimes people say, well, what I'm going to say, or I can't speak in public or something. And so we are going to launch the first video during the Midwinter Conference in Seattle. And I'm very excited about that. It will be a total of three videos available free, and they will be produced by the ALA Washington office in partnership with other organizations. So I know that right now they are speaking with the National Association of Storytelling, and I love that. I love that part because we really bring in the professionals to help us with that. I also will be running, or ALA will be running, a social media campaign called My Library, My Story, to tell elected officials our stories about, you know, libraries strengthening communities. And this will be likely done during National Library Week in April 2019. We're going to take a day to do that, and it will be very targeted to elected officials locally and nationally as well. And I hope everybody can join these efforts. And there are, like I said, opportunities for everyone. And now we're going to have some materials to prepare people to help us even more with this library advocacy.
Excellent. And sort of related to that, the reasoning why we want to support libraries is that in a recent column you wrote in American Libraries, you said that libraries must continue to move forward to benefit humanity, compassion, empathy, awareness, and understanding into our library services nationwide. Why is this such an important issue that you wanted to tackle as ALA president?
That's a great question, and I'm very happy that you made it. We are living in challenging times, and everyone I talk to thinks that these are challenging times for different reasons that we are reading on the papers every day. But it's very interesting because, and I've mentioned this in different places, grandparents and parents think they lived also in very challenging times, but these are our times. So, you know, we have to, right, to deal with that. And we watch the news. And so we feel how the compassion, empathy, understanding is good for us as human beings, and is good for our communities. Those elements, to bring them into the service and libraries, that will be good. And so we need more of that. And as we know, library workers are interacting with human beings, our, you know, fellow human beings, all the time, every day. We bring access to information in different ways to our library patrons, to all in the community. And again, all includes so many different groups that are part of our society fabric, right? The homeless, the incarcerated, the seniors, children, immigrant, refugees, LGBTQIA, persons with disabilities, all of them need information for better their lives, for better education, to help understand health conditions, to do homework, and yes, to continue preserving democracy as we know it. Libraries are the heart of democracy and are the heart of the communities that we serve. So we need that. We need humanity, compassion, empathy, and we need to be aware of situations and conditions experienced by other fellow human beings. Mm-hmm. So I think that is key. I think that is key to serve our communities, and I want to do everything I can together with our big ALA team to bring this into our libraries. And I'm working towards that. We have some good initiatives about equity, diversity, and inclusion. And I feel like this is a good time to do this. It's very, yes, indeed, timely. Libraries everywhere are striving to provide access to information, which is a human right, and serve everyone in the community. And so we need everyone's help. And I would like to encourage everyone to continue working together, to continue building communities. Because, yes, libraries equal strong communities, but these communities are composed by people from all different types of backgrounds and abilities. And the best is to embed these principles of kindness and humanity and tolerance into our services.
Right, because the library is really where all these people come together, so we have to be welcoming to everybody.
Indeed, indeed. And that it has been like that for centuries. Well, I will say it has been like that for a long time. We do know that in the early ages, there were some libraries that accepted some people and not others. So, but we have come a long way, and I think we can do even more of that.
And kind of speaking on that topic, the profession itself still continues, seems to have a diversity issue, that it's mostly white, mostly heterosexual, all that kind of basic stuff that we're trying to fight against and make the profession more diverse. What can we do, and what do you think ALA can do to help increase diversity in the profession?
This is very important as well. Diversity, and I want to say equity, diversity, inclusion. which is a strategy, a strategic direction of ALA. That's a very important area to me. And I have to say that my most recent column for American Libraries Magazine is all about that too. You know, serving with love,
yes.
But serving with love all our diverse communities, and you know how libraries can serve with love. Besides that, I just you know, I am working with a wonderful advisory board to build on ALA's existing work on this area. This team and I have been in contact with the ALA Office for Diversity, Literacy, and Outreach Services, known as OTLA. And following in the footsteps of ALA past president Molly Raphael, Diverse Voices video series that highlighted ALA leaders from different diverse backgrounds, ALA now will launch a new video series that will highlight why and how we can embed these principles of diversity in our libraries. And these suggestions, these recommendations are going to come out from our ranks, from our own librarians that are working with these diverse populations all the time, and that are working with their own colleagues that are perhaps, like you said, not all from diverse backgrounds. So I am looking forward to that. I think we're going to learn a lot from it, because it's coming from our own colleagues that live this, they experience this on a daily basis. And so I think it's a good step for ALA to do that. We are very excited, and we're going to have about 15 videos made now during the Midwinter Conference, and they will be available later, I hope by April. We are going to put it on the ALA YouTube channel, and everybody can pick it up from there and share and perhaps have conversations at their own libraries about this. And additionally, I wanted to present a number of free webinars about this topic. And the first one was already presented in November, and it's called The Heart of the Library. And that was presented by Dr. Michael Stevens. And the recording is already available on the ALA APA website. It's the Association of Professional Allies, and that's a companion organization to ALA. On the other side, I want to say that I also was very interested in, I am still very interested in bringing the ALA staff on board as well. So I'm happy to share that ALA staff members have started taking a series of trainings focused on diversity. And I'm supporting this effort 100%. I think they already took one, and they will be taking another two. So that's great news. It's, you know, because it covers not only our part of the members, but also the staff. And to me, those are very important. And so finally, I want to encourage everyone to attend our midwinter meeting, because we are going to have a very wonderful speaker. Her name is Robin DiAngelo, and she's the featured speaker at my president's program. She's the author of White Fragility, Why It's So Hard for White People to Talk About Racism. And she will discuss this phenomenon of white fragility, and we'll offer examples of what it might look like, as well as, you know, what people can do to engage more in conversations about racism, which is a very complex area. And I am just fortunate that to have the opportunity to bring Ms. DiAngelo to the conference. I believe that as a profession, our library services and our own profession has made incredible progress in you know, recognizing systems of oppression and different areas within equity, diversity, and inclusion that needs to be addressed. But I think we can do more. And so to do that, in my team, thought we should first address, you know, foundational issues. And then that will help us to really come together and move forward in a more unified way. And so this is where we are right now at ALA. We are, you know, doing everything we can in terms of bringing these resources to our members. And I hope that it also, you know, benefit non-members, because a number of our resources are free and available on the website. And so, and also bringing resources and equipping our own ALA staff members. And I'm very happy that I am able to work with a team, and conditions are just there. It's very timely for us to keep moving this forward.
Right, because in the past, people have kind of said, oh, well, we'll just increase the pipe, you know, get the pipeline going of getting people early on. But you have to do those necessary steps that you're talking about of the equity and inclusion, because you don't want to get a bunch of people in who don't feel welcome in their job once they get there. So you have to kind of prepare the field first and have those conversations with white people about why this is important, because a lot of times people are just like, well, but everybody's just equal, and I just say that. It's like, well, but it's not. And so you have to just, you have to make people understand the problem so that we can fix it, and then maybe people will be more attracted to the profession.
Yes, you know, and it's a very complex area, as we have experienced in different ways. And we have trailblazers like EJ Josie, Arnulfo Trejo, and they started the ALA, what we know as ALA Ethnic Caucus, but those are library associations on their own. And EJ Josie was ALA president, and they brought so much awareness and I think education and conversations to our profession. And so throughout the years, I think we have come a long way from that, you know, in a progressive way. And this is the perfect time. I think it's a good time to continue moving forward. Yes.
So just to wrap up, for people who are not currently members of ALA, why do you think, what would you say to them to convince them to join? What's your best pitch for why ALA is important for people to be members of?
Well, I can only, you know, share my story. I joined ALA when I moved from Puerto Rico, and I was, you know, I moved to work in New York, and I found a place where I could network with other colleagues. And I know people hear this, but for me it was so true. I found a family, I found a house. So I could network with colleagues, and I remember it was like a new world. I partnered with them to publish articles and create programs. And I remember I was very impressed with ALA when they asked librarians to call elected officials and send letters. And, you know, back then, you know, we sent letters to advocate for libraries. and coming from a community organizing family, I thought, wow, these are great efforts. And in other areas, you know, I always read about their the information on the website, chock full of news and resources. And then I just threw myself into the association work. I participated on the website, and there were specific, you know, topics on webinars and online programming, very timely to what I was doing, outreach and multicultural populations and services and collection development. And, you know, I always felt very proud of being a member of ALA. And they are the association of my profession. They represent me, and I want to be there. And if there is something that I think was needed or that wasn't done in a way that I thought it should, I always felt that I could talk to ALA committee members, ALA leaders. I could talk to staff members. I always felt so free to email them directly and say, oh, I would like this or that, or why wasn't this done? And so, you know, throughout the years, I've spoken to staff about things too that could have been done differently. And I found them very receptive. I love that. I really like that. And I encourage everyone to join ALA. And let me tell you, from visiting libraries and conversing with library workers around the country during this past year and year and a half, I should say, I know how passionate about librarianship and communities they are. And at ALA, I want to say that we share those passions. I share those passions. And so I want to take the opportunity to encourage library workers to bring all those beautiful characteristics to the ALA divisions, committees, roundtable. ALA is doing great work advocating for libraries and at national level, and then helping and providing resources for library workers to advocate at their local level, at the county level, city, state levels. And ALA divisions are providing a myriad of services to its members. So I think it's a good, it's a very good, smart decision to join and help us to be a better association. I want to mention one last piece about this that I'm happy about. For instance, ALA has about 11 divisions, and those are also library associations like ACRL, LITA, PLA, ASL, all that. And I want to mention the work of one, just one thing they're doing, and they're doing many things, mm-hmm. many wonderful things. And so is the Public Library Association. And they are engaging with the Census Bureau and other stakeholders to ensure that libraries are informed and are represented in the policy discussion and planning process for the upcoming census. And that's very important. ALA is advocating for a fair, accurate, and inclusive census that recognizes the role of libraries, you know, what role we play in this civic effort. And we are very active in this area. We have sent a letter in terms of the way they plan to count certain parts of our population. And so we are on record about that. And I want to encourage everybody to consider ALA. They are the association of our profession. And if we want something to be good and be successful, I think we want to be part of that. So that's my message and my encouragement for everybody today.
All right. Well, Loida, thank you so much for coming back to the show and talking about how you became a librarian and all of the great things you're doing as president. If people wanted to follow up, how could they get in touch with you?
Yes, and that's a great idea, a great question, I should say. They can follow what I'm doing on my Facebook, Loida Garcia Fable, ALA president. And I usually post, you know, I'm very into social media, so I post videos or pictures of what I'm doing. My last one is from last week when I visited a school library here in New York with beautiful services, and we need more of that. So I post that there. Also on Twitter, it's one word, Loida Garcia Fibo. And, you know, they can also email me, loidagarciafibo@gmail.com. I'm available, and people know that I'm responsive. And now in this ALA role, if I don't answer one email, you will see probably some type of, you know, as it happens, some type of communication from ALA, because I do want to be responsive. And there are many ways of being responsive. So right. creating a resource, providing information, those are ways as well. And I want to be that president, and I think I am. But this is not, you know, one person's effort. It's really teamwork. And so, like I said, you know, if you want to something for to be better or provide different resources, let's say, contact me, contact us. And this is one to I want to be during this year, be here for you.
Great. Thank you so much, Loida.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And have a great time. Bye-bye.
Circulating Ideas is produced by Steve Thomas in the suburbs of Atlanta. Views expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of my place or work or the place of work of guests. For past interviews, visit circulatingideas.com and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, or your podcast app of choice. And help others find the show by leaving a rating or a review. You can follow the show on Twitter @CircIdeas or like the show's Facebook page. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thanks for listening, and keep circulating your ideas. Thanks again to Mometrics Test Preparation for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. To get 10% off your first purchase and a free demo, visit goelibrary.com and use that promo code podcast. That's goelibrary.com, promo code podcast.